All right, welcome back to the Bombeck Show. Appreciate you staying around. Art Williams is in studio. Before we move on with the stories, Art, tell people how to connect with you. You have a little museum going on you just got going, and a website, all that.
Okay, I have a Camp Reynolds website. It is campreynolds.com. You can go there. It has a variety of different things. Notebook section has a variety of different things, from people to commanders, etc. And also, I have a list of all the presentations and displays I've done. You can look, you know, back into the past. And I put up a blog once in a while, but pretty much just kind of maintain that now. I no longer do displays anymore, where I take stuff out into places. And I'll mention that more once we get talking about that, the museum thing. And so that's how you can get a hold of me there. My email is art@acwpro.com. On there, too, you can download a camp info card there, too, that tell, you know, kind of brief synopsis of the camp that you can download as well.
Very good.
And for this, the museum one, the website is acwmuseum.com. And I've just opened that up the other day.
We'll By appointment only?
What's that?
By appointment only? By appointment only.
Oh, yeah, to visit that, you have to have an appointment. You can basically, the deal is pick a date, pick a time, call me, 1 to 4 people, and come on in. And
do you want to give your number or no?
Yeah, I'll give that.
Go ahead.
The phone number, too, is for either one of those is 724-588-8900. And kind of the purpose for the museum site, as it covers Camp Reynolds and a few other things, is to for people to be able to come in and see, look, and touch stuff, ask questions. When people come, there's not going to be a presentation that we're following. It's thanks for coming. What are you interested in? Take a look. I have 8 different shelves with basically things from the early 1900s to the 1980s. And any of that stuff is basically a collection of my grandparents, my parents, and myself that we've kept. I'm not a collector. It's just things that they've had. So those are scattered on, you know, on shelves where, you know, people can look, pick it up, look at it, and whatever. Then I have old records from 45s to 78s to 33s people can look at. Some of those I've recorded. If you want to hear Doris Day sing something, I can play that on there. You know, it's scratchy. But then I also have a bunch of, not a whole lot of old books, like back in the 60s when the, you know, we were going to have atomic bombs and all that stuff. And I get a kick out of that one because to keep us safe, they had us hide under desks, you know. But then
duck and cover.
Yeah.
You remember doing it?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think they only did that. I'm 64. I'm pretty sure they did that only to us through first, maybe second grade, and then they stopped. So 67, 68 is about when they stopped doing the duck and cover drills, at least at Sharpsville.
Yeah, and well, I was at Pamatuming, and I started in 57, so somewhere in there with that. I have an old McGuffey arithmetic book that my grandfather had and just a few others.
Who was a local guy, by the way? McGuffey readers were the main McGuffey readers were the main books in almost all of American schools for generations. McGuffey was from Youngstown, Ohio.
Oh, really? Was
you know, there's still McGuffey Lane over there and all that. That's McGuffey was a local guy. Yeah, that ended up getting his reader to be the national book for all.
I never knew that at all. But and then I also have like 3 file folders. One is just miscellaneous stuff about Clark, about Conneaut Lake, the Lionsville Spillway, just different things like that. And then the next
they can come to the museum to check it all out, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to tell them everything.
Oh, yeah.
And you got to leave them hanging a little bit.
I also have album, you know, like a photo album for the camp, my dad's Navy stuff. And so all that stuff is in-house stuff. And basically the in-house stuff, you can look and ask and do whatever, you know, at that time, you know, point in time.
Yeah.
So, and what it does, it brings Camp Reynolds and all that other stuff right where you're at. You know, it's
excellent.
You know, you'd have to, you couldn't, you, there's lots of stuff I have on the website you can look, listen to, you know, the Sharon Clark flood and all, you know, a lot of different things, but that's the main thing. You're there.
You mentioned Doris Day there from one of the albums. There were some famous people that came in and out of the Camp Art. Tell me, give us what you know about the USO visitations or the famous people that came through there.
The a lot of them, sports wise, Joe Louis, it was a heavyweight boxing champion. Sugar Ray Leonard was also there. The owner of the Steelers.
Sugar Ray, is that right? Sugar Ray Leonard, wasn't he later?
Oh, Sugar Ray Robinson.
There it is.
Thanks for correcting me.
Yes. Right. Sugar Ray Leonard was a later iteration of the 80s boxer. Go ahead.
Yeah,
so
Joe
Louis and wow. That's.
And he would do, him and his sparring partner, they would put on exhibitions. And I actually have a picture my cousin had got me, original picture, where he's in the gym in the hospital area, because the hospital area had a gymnasium as well. And then, of course, probably the most famous was Judy Garland was there. She was there for a couple days, and she would go around and to the mess halls and into the service centers, you know, service clubs and sing and whatever.
Is that what she there wasn't a big like stage where they'd put on a performance for everybody at the camp? It was just smaller performances.
Yeah, basically smaller, because there was two or three service clubs, one on which would be 10th Street nowadays. It's long gone, but that's where, you know, a lot of the big name people would be. They also had an amphitheater. When you head down 10th Street, it would have been just a little ways and off to the right. But she would go also, you know, she would visit people in the hospital, but then she would also just pop into a mess hall, jump up on a table, start to sing. You know, the guys would be singing with her and whatever. And basically the protocol, there was the head of the special services, they would call, he would go pick these people up at the airport.
Mm-hmm.
And then once he got them here, then the MPs generally would escort them around. And there was one, I can't think of his name now, Kirpin. He stayed at Reynolds, in the area in Greenville, and he had a funeral home up there, Kirpin Funeral Home. But he was second in command of the MPs, but he was escorting her around. And there was this little back and forth with them, you know. She'd be calling him, Captain Kirpin. And he'd say, no, I'm a lieutenant. And you know, well, you ought to be a captain, you know, whatever. And then when she left, I have it was a digital copy that his son sent me. It's him escorting her down apparently the side steps mm-hmm. of one of those. And she autographed it
mm-hmm.
to Captain Kirpin from Judy Garland.
And he wasn't a captain. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, and it's like the
So it's a little bit of shtick they had going on. Their little vaudeville-type shtick.
Yeah, right. Yeah, just with them. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, the story is like he got a promotion, but he didn't get a raise.
I would give my left pinky to see Judy Garland sing Somewhere Over the Rainbow on a table at Camp Reynolds. Oh. To be a fly on the wall there to hear her sing that song specifically. It would be amazing. There were was there some other famous movie stars there or no?
Yeah,
I know the Pirates and you said the Pirates and the Indians played exhibition games there.
They played exhibition game against themselves.
Oh, okay, each against each other, Indians, Pirates,
and then but they also played. I can't remember which. I might have them switched up, but the Cleveland Indians played like the camp all stars.
Sure. That'd be fun. You get to play against the pro team, yeah.
And then the Pirates, they played against the, I think it was the Youngstown All-Stars would come and, you know, and they played a game, you know. And
a lot of good ball teams back in the day.
Oh.
Around here especially, there were, just read a story there at, I'm trying to think of the name of the company, one of the big mills here. They had what, in essence, were almost AAA ball clubs.
Okay.
They would hire guys into work, and they would give them these really easy jobs in the mill. But they would pay them really big money, like $200, $300 a game.
Wow.
Which is, guys are making $30, $40 a week during that era at best. Yeah. They're paying these guys. And so these were almost like pro teams. There'll be a story on that in the July paper, the way it was. I just began to research that. I'm trying to think if it was Shenango. It wasn't Shenango. What was the one of the Mills and Farrell had a, what in essence were really early pro minor league teams. So there was a lot of good ball players. They would bring them in, especially in that Youngstown region. And then we had in the early 1900s, farther back, we had actually a pro league here in the area. It was actually a minor league, guys that went on to play in the pros. So lots of good ball players in that era of the 40s that were being paid to play, even at Westinghouse and Sharon Steele. Yeah. And it's really truly amazing.
Well, let me mention about the ball. You know, talking baseball.
Yeah,
there were little ball backstops all over the camp there.
I'm sure.
You know, there was all kind of pickup. You know,
lots of guys you can always get a ball game together.
Exactly.
Yeah, those are the days when baseball. I'm a big baseball fan, but those were the days when baseball was still America's sport.
Yeah, and there were several. I can't pronounce her name. A couple. At the time, Youngstown was bigger. They would have shows. And you know, Broadway shows, supposed to, so to speak of. But then some of the actresses, and they would come over to the camp on their break. They, too, would go into a mess hall. Like with Julie, this was not a planned, you know, like performance. They would just, hey, let's go to that one. And
you don't remember any names, though?
I'd have to look back on my website or in my book. I cannot remember.
But pretty big actresses for the day.
Oh, yeah, they would be well-known back in the day and whatever.
And a long history there. That Kenley Players was over there in Youngstown for a long time that had massive amount of huge actors and actresses that came through there and Warren all the way back.
And the soldiers, they also had their – I know they took, obviously not all of them, but down to the ice capades in Pittsburgh. And then they would also have the camp had their own – soldiers had their own entertainment. They had their own sports, you know, high jump, long jump.
Like an intramurals almost.
Yeah, probably like that, you know.
When a guy would go to Pittsburgh, by bus? Or would you take a train to Pittsburgh?
Probably potentially either one because trains were – but I'm assuming that the Army bused all them – or not bused them, but probably – yeah, probably did bus them all, you know, when they went down for that group to, you know, to do that and whatever.
I can't remember who I talked to, and it may have been somebody that was on the way it was Facebook page, but said that her dad had a cab, made a ton of money during that era, running people from to the downtown Sharon to shop. From the he had a cab basically, and he was nonstop from the camp. You know, from there's a guy's calling you all the time, but. Made a ton of money running guys for that whole 2 or 3 years into downtown Sharon from there.
There was a lot of, you had the USO in Greenville. You had the USO part of it down at the Buell Club. And then in Farrell, about the same time I think the Greenville one opened up, they had a USO for the black soldiers.
Huh.
Because things were separate. You know,
you don't know
segregated.
Where that was, do you? Would you know where that was these days?
I would have to look back in my...
Yeah, try to figure out where it was.
Yeah. But then, like I said...
And it was still segregated?
Oh, yeah. It was segregated. They had, back in, July of 43, they had a race riot there.
But we got about 3 or 4 minutes before we needed to go break. Talk a little bit about that, because it's a fascinating story.
It was back, as I said, it was segregated. Up north, it wasn't that big of a deal, but the Southerners didn't set well with that. And having that many 50, 60, 70,000 people there didn't work well. And a quick version, some white soldiers went into a black PX. Black soldiers decided, well, they're going to go into a white PX. That didn't work. There was a big commotion. The camp commander came down, got things settled. Shortly after that, two black soldiers were picked up on a pass violation, thrown into their stockade, and got the other guys riled up. They broke out. They broke into a supply building where ammo and guns were kept, and they started firing up towards the white section. And the MPs come down. This was like what had just been starting of dark. And finally they got that started. The people disappeared, and there was supposedly one killed, but, you know, there's so many different stories that you would have a hard time believing that nowadays. There was no news person there or whatever.
I think, didn't you say that you had spoke with somebody who said that number was greatly under-exaggerated?
Yeah.
That there was actually more than one person actually killed.
Yeah, one of the DVDs I made, I interviewed like 10 people. One was was an MP. I'm like,
who was there? An MP that was there.
Yeah, that was there.
Yeah.
And I'm like 6'3" and a little heavier now than I was then. This guy made me look like a choir boy. And we were talking. George Lecision, the Pamatuming supervisor, him and another guy's the one that actually got the 50th gone. But he, anytime we ran into somebody, he'd call me. I'd go video it. And we were talking, and George would always ask about the race riot. And he asked this guy, well, the report says one. He says, how many people do you think were killed? He said about 30.
Wow.
But the minute he said that, he broke down and started to cry.
Wow.
And he was one of the—
because he was part of it.
He was one of the— oh, and then George, he said about 30, and George says, well, why do you say that? And he says, I was shooting. He was part of the MPs that went down, and, you know, when they were, you know, under what, shooting at whoever and whatever at that point in time. But that always, you know, like—
makes you wonder, did the Army just say, oh, yeah, one, and then bury the, you know, hide the fact that there was a real, that's a real race riot when 30 people die. Wow.
If that was the case, you know.
Right, if that was the number. Even if it was 10, that's 5.
Oh, right. Other people have said they went into the hospital and, you know, and there's like 12 people that are injured in there, black soldiers. And they, you know, the Army said only 6. And this guy, even like the next day, he went up to the MP, you know, main office and said, what about, what was going on? And they looked at him like, what are you talking about?
Kind of hide it up, put it all under the rug.
It was done.
Isn't that when they changed the name of the place, though? Is that part of the remarketing of the place, or
yeah,
no?
I thought that it might be. That was in July. It was in September that they renamed it to Camp Reynolds.
So it'll be a couple months later that maybe they thought, maybe we should rename it. You wonder if that was part of
the— I wonder, but then I did more research, and the Army's line was that, you know, a camp—
well, you're not going to admit it.
A camp shouldn't be called by its name, you know, it should be called, you know, like Camp Reynolds instead of Shenango Personnel Replacement Depot. It should have a name.
After a war hero.
Yeah, right. From PA, Civil War hero, John Fulton Reynolds.
Give him just 10 seconds on Reynolds, what he did.
Major General. He was a Union officer. Famous. He was an excellent officer, excellent horseman, but he mostly known at the Battle of Gettysburg the first day as can't think of the cavalry guy that was holding off the Confederates. Well, Reynolds come up. He went with a couple other guys kind of surveying the situation, what to do, and he was shot by a Confederate sniper at that point in time. That's
a Civil War hero. That's where Reynolds came from, in case anybody out there listening is wondering where the name Reynolds came from. And there is no city of Reynolds. People say the city of Reynolds, but it's what the government would call a designated populated area.
Exactly.
There's not actually, it's actually Greenville addresses there. And it's an area that's not really never been incorporated. There's no mayor or anything, you know.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I kind of living around there, never thought much about it. But what you just said, it's like, That's what it was. We had a transfer post office.
Even if you look it up, it'll say populated, designated, I forget the term.
Yeah, that's it.
Designated populated area or something like that, meaning it's not really a city, but there's people there.
Yeah,
hey, I'm here with Art Williams. You're listening to the Bombeck Show. We're talking about Camp Reynolds during World War II. Always fascinating to me. More when we get back after this short timeout. Caleb from the Record Argus will be in to talk about the history of that paper that's been around for 150-some years plus. He might be in the building already, not sure, but I'm here with Art Williams now, who is, we're talking about the history of Camp Reynolds here. He is the historian for that and has a museum that he started by appointment only. What else, Art? And you wanted to mention some things in the museum.
Just kind of what it covers. There's like 6 main areas. One is about Camp Reynolds. The other one is about World War II Navy, my dad's Navy career over in the Pacific Theater of Operations. And then there's items from the early 1900s up to like 1980. And then there's my ACW Productions business that I had, all the different things I've filmed and samples of, you know, videos of labels, et cetera, and then I have a section for myself. Art Williams kind of tells a little bit about me, but thing I wanted to mention, once you go there, but the very last link is my West Virginia experience. I taught fifth grade there for 16 years. And then there's one little section about just additional stuff on that. But you could go to my Camp Reynolds site, Greenville area website, whatever. There's a link to the museum in on that.
Excellent stuff. Well,
You got time, Spencer, talking about the Record Argus. Could give you a side story about
that. Yeah. We had maybe 3 or 4 minutes left.
Oh, okay. We can get a couple of them. Earl Miller, that used to be the editor back in the day when he was a news guy, they were building the camp, so it would have been, 1942. They wanted to go down. They kind of knew what was going on, but back in the day, they didn't just...
They didn't tell anybody. They're just kind of doing it.
So they sent him down there. So he's down, and he sees some guy surveying. So he goes over to him and says, "What are you surveying for?" Guy looks at him and says, $2.25 an hour. Earl figured he's not going to get anything out of that guy.
Right.
Another story was I started to mention about this Audrey's mother. She lived in...
Who?
A lady that lives in the high rise behind me.
Okay.
She was telling me this story about her mother. Her mother lived in Hadley, and a friend from Greenville had got a hold of her and said, "Why don't you come on into town tonight? There's going to be a dance at the USO." And that lady, her mom said, "Well, I don't know. I don't have a date. I'd be kind of uncomfortable, coming without a date." And her friend said, "Don't worry. There'll be lots of guys there.
Your date, there'll be 500 guys there."
She came, met Arthur. 2 months later, they were married.
Wow. Stories are really abundant. Unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. And then there's numerous people that, and I think when maybe we were talking beforehand, how many people met their husband, their wives there, it was quite a scenario with people coming and going all that time.
It's disappointing to me, Art, that we never in school never learned that we should have had. We got American history all through junior high and high school. There should have been at least a 2 week or 4 week period there, 6 weeks between report cards, at least at Sharpsville, where we learned local history. That it's a shame that the kids don't know but most people don't know the story of Camp Reynolds. And it's a shame that we aren't taught our local history. I think it's a disservice to kids because there's a lot of all the history that I learned while doing the way it was has been blows my mind.
Yeah,
stuff
right.
that I never knew. I'm like, what? All kinds of things that I never knew existed here. And it's a shame that kids don't learn, don't know about that whole, because that's just it's just a fascinating story, all of it. And we should know our history there. It's a crime against those kids to not teach them local history.
Yeah, especially when that's why you're there. That's why Reynolds is there. That's why the high school is there. All that stuff is,
The history in Sharpsville. I never knew that Sharpsville was the fifth largest. At one time in the middle 1800s, Sharpsville was the fifth largest iron producing city in the nation. St. Louis, Pittsburgh, Indianapolis, whatever, and Sharpsville.
Wow.
There were 11 iron furnaces there.
Wow.
But we didn't learn any of that when I was a kid, so it's, I think it's important to know it makes you see an area differently. Once you taught me about Camp Reynolds, now I see it differently.
Yeah, right.
A totally different view of it than what I, before, you schooled me on it. So, unfortunately, my friend, we are out of time. Give people that website one more time so they can find you.
Okay. The Camp Reynolds website is campreynolds.com. The ACW Museum website is acwmuseum.com.
Excellent stuff. Art Williams, man, it's always fun when you come in here. We didn't even get into the POWs that were there. The German and Italian POWs were at the camp. So if people want to learn more or to learn about the POWs that were there, one guy escaped two or three different times. And it's just all fascinating. I think that as my music, we like to keep going, but we are out of time. Hey, man, I appreciate you coming in.
Hey, appreciate the opportunity. Good to see you again.
You too as well. All right, don't touch that dial. More of the Bombeck Show right after this short news break.